Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Can empathy be taught? That's what Capital University President Denvi Bowman wanted to find out with the empathy experiment. For 6 weeks, six Capital University students immersed themselves in a program designed to help them experience the lives of the working poor in Central Ohio. So what did they learn? We'll hear from one of those students coming up, and also two of the community agencies that gave the students real-world experience of what it's like to live as a working poor resident of Central Ohio. To our listeners, what do you think? Can empathy be taught? Have you ever walked a mile in another's shoes? Did it matter? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So right now we welcome Capital University President Denvi Bowman to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Andy Grizel. He's a junior at Capital University. Andy's an early childhood education major, and he was matched with Access Health Columbus for the empathy experiment. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So, President Bowman, how did this occur to you? This is something you've been working on for a couple of years. How did it occur to you that this was something that you wanted to find out about?
Well, indeed, you're right. I have been thinking about the empathy experiment for not months, but years. And in fact, the empathy experiment fits very well with our values at Capital University. Our students are interested not only in doing well in the classroom, they're also interested in doing good in the community beyond our campus gates. Our students spend thousands of hours every semester in community service projects. And, of course, from these community service projects, they have learned sympathy. But empathy, of course, is something much more profound. It has a much broader, deeper impact on all concerned. And so the next logical question for me to explore was how we can move from sympathy to empathy. Can empathy be taught? And if so, can it be harnessed as an engine for powerful and positive social change?
Was there a shortage that you sensed of empathy among the student body?
Well, I realize that there are lots of studies indicating that perhaps that is the case. Perhaps there is a shortage. I'm not so sure that that's actually true. Certainly the students that I'm privileged to work with each and every day continually suggest to me that we all have a very bright future, and that in point of fact, the energy, the activism, and the interest in community that they have should again be harnessed as quickly as possible. So actually, I'm very optimistic about what can be done.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about empathy. We're talking about the empathy experiment at Capital University. If you have a question or comment, President Bowman will be with us not for the entire hour, so you might want to get that question or comment in soon if it's aimed at him, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page as well if you'd like to communicate with us that way. Andy Grizel, were you chosen because you're a particularly unempathetic person, or what? How did you get on this ride?
Well, the process, there was a video release by the president, somewhat mysterious about what this project was going to entail, where he essentially said this would be a project to look at empathy. I really knew nothing other than that. And so we had to answer a simple question, what's something that we've done wrong? It was open to all students at Capital. And based on our response to that question, they would choose six participants in the empathy experiment.
What did you answer?
I grew up living basically with my grandmother. And over time, she developed Alzheimer's the last few years of high school. And I just put on there that I really wish during that time I could have, you know, while she was still available to communicate and understand, that I really wished I could have told her how much I cared about her and how much I appreciate appreciated the fact that she raised me, you know, since I was three, and how much she meant to me. And almost when I really realized that and matured enough to know that that's what happened, it was almost too late for her to really understand and comprehend that. So that was what I put down as something I'd done wrong.
So, President Bowman, what was it about that answer? What was it about Andy that made him, you know, join? Really, a very small, only six students participated in this experiment.
Well, I thought the answer was both reflective and refreshingly honest. And I should say that we were also looking for a broad diversity of students to participate, younger students, older students, students with different academic backgrounds and different experiences. And so Andy's answer was a very good fit. We had never met until after the selection process had already been made. And I think that it was a very happy choice on the part of myself and Capital.
We call it an experiment, but was there a control group? How were you experimenting? What were you looking for?
Well, in many respects, the entire effort was an experiment. Again, while there is some literature on empathy and can it be taught, there is not very much. So we thought it was experimental in the sense that we're probably doing something that's almost unique and learning as we go. And so there was not a control group, but those are the kind of issues and concerns that we'll probably take into consideration when we return to the empathy experiment in the next academic year.
I can imagine the question, can empathy be taught, wondering that myself, thinking about empathy, but I can't imagine how I go about discovering an answer to it. I'm not sure there is a right or wrong answer. I'd like to know, did you find an answer to the question? And how did you go about finding it?
There were numbers of ways that we attempted to go about teaching empathy. And all of our students had experiences that were unique to them. But I can say in general that there were experiences that we designed at the university for our students to undergo or in some cases endure. And there were also experiences that our community partners also designed for the students to undergo. And then collectively, once a week, all of the students and I would meet and we would talk and reflect and sometimes read about experiences similar to our own. And at the end, we, I think, all came to the conclusion that indeed empathy can be taught. I think we also were convinced that probably everyone starts at a different level and that people who are learning empathy probably reach different levels at different times. One of our students and participants describe the whole experience very much as a ladder, and that you keep climbing the rungs toward empathy, but the ladder is probably in height infinite, and no one probably ever arrives at the perfectly empathetic state.
Andrew Gazell, what did you think when you learned about what the project was about? Do you hesitate before jumping in, or what?
Generally, I was excited to learn about empathy. I was obviously nervous because, like I said, it was mysterious. We weren't sure what these immersion experiences were going to look like. We weren't sure, you know, who we were going to report to, all sorts of stuff. Just nervous in that regard. But as far as learning about empathy, potentially moving towards more, being more of an empathetic person, that was something that I was excited about.
Did you get credit for it? How did you fit it into your regular schedule?
We didn't get school credit. I mean, obviously, I think we all learned a lot from this, so it was totally worth it. But we sat down the very first night within, I think, 20 minutes, and we kind of put our schedules down on paper, and they worked to find time. And we worked with our community partners around our school schedule, work schedule, to find time to do these experiments and meet with each other.
So give us an example of something that you did that had an impact on you and changed you in some way?
I think the most moving experience for me, it was at the Charitable Pharmacy of Central Ohio, and it was really an interaction that I had with a woman there who was in need of her medicines and was unable to afford them. And I spoke with her just about, you know, her life and situation. And I think 7 years ago, she was married. Her and her husband both had jobs, you know, successful. And she was hanging a picture one night, and she fell. And she broke her leg and was eventually on bed rest for 13 months. And, you know, throughout that time was let go for whatever circumstances. And her husband, shortly after that, passed away. He had a brain aneurysm. And eventually, you know, throughout all these bad circumstances, she ended up 7 years later with $22 to her name and needing help with her medicine. And I realized that's something that could happen to all of us. We could fall one night, break our leg, and, you know, end up with $22 to our name. It's just, we're all, you know, we could all potentially go through that.
So what's the difference between what you were feeling and sympathy?
Well, I think that's something that I learned over time. I realized that empathy, like Dr. Bowman said, can be taught. And then I think we're all available to be empathetic. Some of us, you know, kind of numb out the emotions. I know that's what I did before this, just did not want to feel that. I didn't want to go in this person's shoes because I know that would move me to really have to do something about that, have to help them, have to do something in some way. And so I think the difference between sympathy and empathy is empathy really moves you to help, to act in some way, to reach out to that person, to volunteer your time, to volunteer, you know, or to give them money, to help out in some way.
We have to take a break right now. We're talking about empathy. We're talking about it with in regards to the empathy experiment at Capital University. Joining us at this segment, President Denvey Bowman, who conceived the program, and also Andy Grizel. He's one of the six students that participated in the empathy experiment at Capital. If you have a question for us, give us a call. And do you think that empathy can be taught? Give us a call and let us know what you think, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back.
Good morning. You're listening to 89.7 NPR News. I'm Eric French. We have thunderstorms and showers likely throughout the day today with a high reaching 74 degrees. Cooling down to 62 tonight, showers and thunderstorms are likely again this evening, and again tomorrow, high of 75.
I'm Jane Clayson. Coming up on the next On Point, from the old maple in Faulkner's yard to Melville's chestnut and Muir's California laurel, we explore the trees that inspired America's famous writers. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point is at 1 p.m. today, right after Fresh Air, here on 89.7 NPR News. It's easy to renew your 89.7 NPR News membership. You can visit wosu.org/renew to make your annual gift today. And while you're online, don't forget to have your membership renew automatically. It's quick and easy, and it's an efficient way to show your support for WOSU. Visit wosu.org/renew for more information.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about empathy today and understanding the lives of the working poor in Columbus, the focus of a unique experiment with six Capital University students. We've been talking to Capital University President Denvey Bowman, who developed the project, and also Andrew Grizel. He's a junior at Capital University. And joining us now is Jeff Beal. Jeff is the president of Access Health Columbus. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
How did the experiment start for you? I mean, how did you get involved, and what did you do?
Yeah, we were approached by Capital to really be a partner to work with a student. And at that point, we didn't know who would be assigned to us, and to really think about a way to put together an immersion opportunity where the student could actually do some type of activity in the community, as well as hooking up the student with other agencies that provide services so they could do some volunteer activity on site. So our role is really to be a partner to think about how to extend this into the community.
So they weren't, you weren't immersed in the lifestyle of somebody who is working poor in Columbus. You were given different points of view depending on what agency you worked with, right, Andy?
I would say there are a few experiments that we did where I was, in my opinion, immersed in the lifestyle, like you said.
Tell us about that.
The first two I had were one of the biggest barriers to healthcare is often you might find someone who could provide it to you at a low cost or free, but then transportation is a huge barrier. It's hard to get there, and so my experiment was to find four low-cost healthcare centers throughout Columbus and take the COTA bus there. But I wasn't able to use, you know, this is an experiment that Jeff invented. I wasn't able to use, you know, internet at home or a smartphone. I just had to start on the COTA bus. And so what I did was take that downtown to the main library, get on a computer, research that. And it took me, I think, about six and a half hours to travel the COTA bus around town just to find these specific places, and all I did was just go inside and, you know, get the information that you fill out when you first go there, and that was one of the experiments, just seeing what it's like to have to take public transportation and how much of a barrier that could be.
Jeff Beal, is that you devised that? How did you come up with that? Are there other examples of what are the sorts of things we need to understand more about what people struggle with?
Sure. I think that when we talk about vulnerable people, and in healthcare, we're all vulnerable. As Andy said earlier, you know, one fall away from losing a job and losing insurance. And so when Andy and I sat down, one of the things that I've learned from doing this work in the community is when we think about access to healthcare, we typically jump falsely to it's all about the healthcare system. But we also have to realize all the barriers to seeking healthcare. So that's where the idea came from. In that transportation and affordability and culture are all barriers that are big in healthcare. And so one of the things we wanted to do with the experiment is all of us agreed that we didn't want to waste services. So we didn't want Andy to fake being a patient and go into a healthcare setting. Mm-hmm. And so the barriers seemed like a really good place to give him a very practical experience. And so I challenged him to meet me at Broad and High and shook his hand and said, good luck. And I knew that he would experience a lot moving around to different parts of the city. And I really didn't give him more direction than that, other than I asked him not to go to an ER. So I wanted him to find our community health centers that are scattered around the city.
Kevin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Ann. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I certainly congratulate Capital and the faculty and students for being involved in this kind of a question. And my question was, or what it was making me think about, was did anyone there think about whether or not this experiment indicates whether or not empathy is something that can be taught or whether it's something that's actually being elicited? And I guess the essence of my question is whether or not the president and the students have found out that empathy is something that's constitutional as a part of the, you know, human nature, or and is being elicited by their experiences from them from within, or whether or not it is actually something being taught. I'm sort of thinking of, you know, sort of the idea in Plato, whether or not virtue is something that can be taught or is something that's simply elicited from our human nature.
So that they may be an empathetic person, but they may not be empathetic about that until
in other words, that empathy is something that's drawn out by experience and it's part of our very nature, or whether or not it's something that's actually can be taught to someone who's in a state of, you know, an absence of knowledge about virtue or empathy.
President Bowman?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, we spent a lot of time debating, is empathy something that's natural to all of us? Are some people simply born, I suppose we could say, more empathetic than others? And at the very beginning of the empathy experiment, we gathered not only the students, but all of our community partners, and we talked about this very question. And at that point in time, there was actually a great deal of diversity of opinion among all of us who were participating. And some of us thought that only people with the right kind of heart could actually ever become empathetic. But by the end of our experiment, we found that we were less divided on this question's answer. And I think we were all persuaded by what we saw, what we heard, what we learned, that indeed empathy can be taught.
So, Andy Grizel, did you feel like you were already an empathetic person and that you just learned more about a certain category of your fellow human being and learned more about them and became more empathetic about them?
I felt like I wouldn't call myself an empathetic person, but I had that capacity. I think, you know, like he asked in the question, inside it's human nature, but what was taught is how to sort of spark that, how to see other circumstances, how to get in, you know, other people's shoes and really spark the empathy. It's already there, but we need to be taught how to develop it and how to understand it and what it means.
Kevin, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from a listener. They write, I was rather brainy and reflective and was sometimes categorized and teased by my siblings. In 1955, I first encountered blacks during the first year of busing in my hometown. I empathized with them as being in a categorized, stereotyped group. It continued into my military experience. Are there certain characteristics about people who are empathetic, President Bowman, that you've learned from this experiment or knew before?
Well, I don't think we have the final answer to that yet. Although I will say, in the process that Andy was talking about, whereby we selected six students from over 160 applicants. In that process, when it was finally all over and we had only a handful remaining who were going to participate, I was surprised to learn that two of the six who had been chosen shared the experience of having lost one of two parents at an early age. We didn't know that about any of the participants. We only later learned that. And so it is possible that there are very early events or experiences, I suppose, that can help spark empathy in those individuals perhaps more quickly than in others. I would just finally say on this subject that even in the case of math, you know, we can teach math. We all agree that. But at the end of the day, some of us are better. Some of us are better at math than others. And so I think that what we will eventually discover is that teaching empathy is kind of the same thing. At the end of the day, some of us may still be more empathetic than others. But I think Andy's right that it's there and that we all can improve. We can all enhance how we respond with empathy to situations.
Jeff Beal, how does it benefit Access Health Columbus to participate in something like this?
Well, I think this is all about giving back and contributing to the work that President Bowman started. But I think anytime you participate in something innovative like this, you learn and take away as much as you give. And I really enjoyed working with Andy. He's very reflective, and it reminds me of how categorical healthcare is. Not to get too technical, but you know, we have all these different categories of insurance, of socioeconomic status, and whenever somebody shifts from one category to the next, it's very disruptive to continuity of care, to facing new barriers. You know, there's this fallacy that the majority of the uninsured are in the inner city, but we have uninsured in all of our suburbs, and it's growing. And a lot of those folks have very little knowledge of the services that are available that are primarily in the city. And that's an example of moving from one category to another. And so I think Andy's questions really helped me get regrounded in the importance of helping people understand how categorical our systems are, and to prepare for change, because we're all vulnerable in healthcare right now, very vulnerable.
Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I am just wondering, in your studies here, you know, so many of our politicians today just feel that this is America and there's no reason for anybody to do without. All they have to do is put their nose to the grindstone and look around and find opportunity everywhere they look. But I just wondered, in what you see, are these people really in the position they're in because it's their fault? Is it because we don't have enough jobs? Do our politicians really see the true picture of what's happening?
I guess that's kind of one way to look at that question, Mike, and is what can we gain from it as a society when we know what people are going through? President Bowman, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I can perhaps start in looking for an answer. I was very surprised to learn from the students who were participating at the end of the experience that I think they had all pondered that same question. And in essence, the question again is, well, is that person in an unfortunate circumstance because he or she did something? And all of our students, in their own way and at their own pace and in their own words, finally suggested that we probably should not be so focusing on the past and how people arrive there, but to be focusing on the present and how to move forward. In essence, not be so judgmental. And that seemed to be the solution that all of our students worked out individually in their separate circumstances, but it seemed like the right answer to me when I heard it, that perhaps we should not be judging too quickly or too harshly and focusing on simply how we can help them move forward to the future.
Thank you, Mike, for your call.
Thank you.
So there's a really strong moral component here that sometimes is difficult to define. And I was wondering, Jeff Beal, if you have a hard time finding people to work with you that have that sort of character trait that we're talking about teaching.
I think one of the key things that Dr. Bowman mentioned is meeting people where they're at and not judging folks. That is one of the main lessons I've learned from doing this work over the last 9 years. It's really easy to look at a person and assume that you understand their circumstances. And that's not to say that there's not a level of personal responsibility built into taking care of yourself and all that. But I have learned that the people that are attracted to the work that we do in the community are folks that are willing to set aside that judgment and meet people where they're at, get to know an individual or a circumstance. And then it's not a matter of saying, you know, that I feel sorry for you, but it's about mobilizing everybody giving a little, and it adds up to a lot. And that's one of my favorite sayings. You know, what can I do about these big issues? Well, part of this experiment to me is, can we lead people to take some small action in their life to help those that are in need of assistance? And there's lots of levels to provide that. Money's one of them, but your time and your expertise and your knowledge are different levels that can be activated through this empathetic process.
James in Cleveland, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I basically have the question. I want to have you better define your terms. What do you mean by empathy versus sympathy? Because from my point of view, feeling for another person's situation is a form of sympathy, whereas actually understanding their emotional state, whether you feel for that person or not, is empathy in a different subject.
President Bowman, you want to talk about what you were shooting for there?
Well, I don't disagree with the definition that our caller has provided. We would spend some considerable amount of time, discussing exactly what is moving from sympathy to empathy. And I think the only thing that I would do to improve upon the caller's definition is to suggest what I learned from all of our students is that the feeling part, the emotional part of empathy is more profound. It's more intense than that of sympathy. And that's something the students taught me. That's something they seem to have learned in their many experiences and their journey through the experiment.
What are you going to change? You're going to do this again. Do you see this going on into the future? Is something you do? Are you going to expand the program? What are you going to do differently?
We're still talking about all the differences that we might be making, but yes, surely we are going to continue on into the future, because our hope is that the empathy experiment has helped each of our student participants become not only more empathetic, but we think that they're probably better contributors to our communities. I certainly know that the empathy experiment has made me more empathetic and really a better person. And so our goal is to involve more people. We certainly hope the empathy experiment was also a positive experience for all of our community partners. And if that is true, then it seems the more people we can involve, the more people who can learn to be empathetic, the better our local communities will be, the better our workplaces will be. And so, yes, we would like to continue and to expand the number of people who are involved.
What if you have a student that doesn't show they've developed empathy? You said all the students, everyone seemed, everything turned out okay. But what happens if it doesn't?
Well, we anticipate that in point of fact, at some point in time, there will be a student who's not receptive to empathy. And I think we'll certainly use that as a learning experience for all of us at Capital University and for all of our partners. I would suggest that probably the people who are most resistant to learning empathy are precisely the people who probably need to learn empathy and are deserving of even more time and more attention. So I think that'll be our approach, more time and more attention to those.
Do you think you could ever be a course that you teach like math?
I suspect that it could be. I even suspect that it probably has some very beneficial, practical, I might even say selfish applications for the student who's more empathetic. He or she probably can better understand what teachers are looking for, better understand what employers are looking for. I think there are a lot of practical applications which we have not explored, but that also are beneficial in ways that we really haven't thought about.
Well, I want to thank you very much, President Denby Bowman of Capital University, for joining us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
When we return, we'll continue the conversation with Jeff Beal of Access Health Columbus, also Andy Grizel, student at Capital University, and joining us then, Barbara Packer. She's with Lutheran Social Services. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Amy Stewart tells us about wicked bugs, like the wasp that takes control of a cockroach by stinging its brain.
They have even been seen grabbing onto the antenna of a cockroach and leading it around the way you'd lead a dog around on a leash.
Find out why on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
And Fresh Air is coming up at noon here on 89.7 NPR News, right after All Sides with Ann Fisher. Good morning, I'm Eric French. Thunderstorms and showers are likely this afternoon going into this evening. High today of 74 degrees, cooling off to 62 overnight.
Hear All Sides with Ann Fisher, Fresh Air, On Point, and Talk of the Nation on 89.7 FM. 89.7 NPR News is your all-day NPR news station. Listen to local and national news all day, every day. 89.7 NPR News is a news service of WOSU Public Media. Join us for news all day, every day on 89.7 or streaming at WOSU.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
Welcome back to All Sides. Empathy, can it be taught? They tried at Capital University this winter. Six students participated in an experiment to learn more about how we view others and whether you can learn to empathize more with another's lot in life. Still with us is Capital University student Andy Grizzell, who participated in the project, and also Jeff Beal of Access Health Columbus. And joining us now is Barbara Packer. Barb is the Corporate Director of Food Pantries for Lutheran Social Services in Franklin, Fairfield, Guernsey, and Noble counties. Barbara also participated in the Empathy Project at Capital University as an agency, and I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be here.
Barb, what did you think when you were asked to participate in this?
Well, anytime you have an opportunity to participate with students, you learn also, and it's exciting to see and really experience their questions and concerns. So anytime you can help a student, it's a great thing, and I think ultimately it impacts the agency that you're associated with.
Over the years, as you've done hiring, was it ever one of those things on the list of to do is find somebody who's empathetic, because we're in the social work business and it helps?
Well, I don't know if that's actually the question that was asked, but someone who's aware of situations and can help to not necessarily solve all the problems, but be able to have that heart to direct people to a solution or to a path that might generate a solution for that individual. So I think that's always something that you look for. I mean, if you have an individual that you're interviewing that has no heart for a social service or caregiving, probably you want to see that they go someplace else to be successful. You do need that starting point, I think, with someone who has a caring heart or a background that has said, I want to try to make a difference. And I think that was the neat thing about the students that we worked with, is they wanted to make a difference. We learn with the books and the things that our professors present to us, but it's that hands-on that keeps them moving forward after graduation to make a difference in the world.
Tell us about some of the experiments or how you did participate.
Well, Megan was one of our students, and we had an interesting experience because being in the food industry, and food is a basic need, and there's a lot of people out there who are experiencing layoffs, downsizing. We've got children to feed, and yet it's very difficult to provide food when you don't have any income, or your income is generated to help utilities and pay for your mortgage and keep up with your rent and so forth. And transportation, as Jeff mentioned and Andy mentioned, is always a critical thing for people who are at the poverty level or below. So all of those things together, we have an opportunity for Megan to travel with our mobile food pantry outside of Franklin County, down into Appalachia, and along the Ohio River to really experience taking a benefit into a community and watching the families come and participate. That was, I think, an interesting experience for her. It gives you a different sense of hunger. We also...
How does it do that versus, you mean, just giving money?
Yeah.
How does it give a different sense? What do you see?
Well, you're actually... families will line up, like, at 4 o'clock in the morning. 5 o'clock in the morning, they know the food truck's coming. We're going to drop off about 8,500 pounds of food and let people have the dignity to shop just like they would through a small grocery store. And I think when you pull up in the morning, the truck arrives, and you look at the families who are standing in line, it just sparks a whole different feeling within you. I can remember one of the ladies, we had fresh pineapples. Well, I go to the grocery, and I buy a fresh pineapple. It's maybe $3 a piece for a Dole pineapple. All of a sudden, you're offering a pineapple to someone who hasn't had one in years. And you see the emotion that takes place when that individual makes a selection and says, I can have a fresh pineapple for my family. And as a student... or as an individual, seeing that all take place, it's just an amazing, you're all of a sudden on a different playing field. You really are there to, you're a servant. You're a servant of that neighbor, because you don't realize, I think living in Franklin County, you don't realize how many people out there are struggling with a food issue. And when you take the food to them and they participate and you see dignity being given back, it impacts you. It impacts you as a person, and it takes you from that sympathy piece that you hear about to that empathetic piece where action is actually started and you're making a difference.
We have an email from Diane. If you want to send us an email, send it to allside@wosu.org. You can also call us, 614-292-8513, if you want to give us a call. If you have a question or comment for us, we're talking about empathy today and the empathy experiment at Capital University. This is from Diane in response to an editorial in today's Dispatch. She writes, I hear criticism of low or no income people all the time, and it was heartening to hear that empathy can be learned. Maybe we should teach it in early childhood education. It could also potentially deter bullying, which, gee, Diane, did you know that Andy Grizel, the student, you are studying early childhood education, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. How might this experiment affect you as a teacher or an administrator in that field?
I think that's a great question. That's been my focus the entire time. How can I be a more empathetic teacher one day? And it's really driven me to seriously think about teaching where the poverty, you know, exists. And I think this will help me. Empathy will generally help us really understand our students. You know, what it's like to be hungry when you're trying to learn, what it's like to be scared, you know, of something going on at home when you're trying to learn, stuff like that. I think just understanding situations and being able to be empathetic with your students is something that could tremendously help educators.
Barb, you mentioned earlier that, you know, what a great opportunity is to work with students because you always learn something. What did you learn?
You know, I really started out thinking empathy may not be able to be taught. I thought if an individual doesn't have a heart for a community or making a difference, you know, might not be able to be taught. After working with Megan and the students and conversations with some of my counterparts throughout this whole thing, I have come to the conclusion that it can be taught. I think there are degrees of empathy. I think there are degrees of an individual's concern for another individual. And I think the whole idea of exposure, you know, many of us live out in the suburbs and we're kind of completely oblivious to some of the issues of the inner city. And hunger is one of those issues that is not as visible. You might have homelessness. I think we have all seen a person pushing their worldly belongings in a grocery cart down the street. And our first thought might be, that's probably a homeless person. But we don't know when it comes to hunger how many of our neighbors out in suburbia America are struggling to put food on the table for their families. We don't tend as a society to share that information. That's something we keep behind our closed doors. So I think that whole ability to put more of this issue in front of our citizens, our officials, elected officials, I think it will help to put them into situations where we can teach them to be more empathetic. I don't see how, and I've seen it with the students, particularly with Megan, you can't turn your back on it. Once you've seen it, you can't turn your back on it if you are any kind of a human being. It's hard to turn your back on someone who's struggling when you might have the ability to help in some small way.
We're talking about the empathy experiment at Capital University. If you want to learn more, you can visit empathy.capital.edu to learn more about each student's journey. There's also a program tonight at 5 p.m. at Mies Hall at Capital University. You can go to empathyexperiment.eventbrite.com to RSVP if you want to attend that, if there's still openings for it. If you have a question or comment now, we welcome them. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And if you want to email us, that's at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned earlier, Andy, that once you learn about it or once you feel empathy for something, that there's then a responsibility. You have to act on it. Is that what you meant by when you said now you're thinking about teaching and focusing on those kinds of issues in your education and in your career?
Yeah, I think that is the way that just in my career I can have the biggest impact by focusing my efforts to that, you know, maybe that kind of school district. And, you know, that question is something that I asked Jeff about, I think maybe at our last meeting. Like, this, you know, this really pushes you to want to help, but it's so overwhelming. What do you do to not just shut down and think I can't make a difference? And like he, you know, I think he mentioned earlier, it's just that little bit you do can make a difference. Or, you know, the friend you talk to and bring along with you to help volunteer, that's, you know, an extra set of hands doing that. And the people that you, you know, talk to and get excited about what you're excited about or what you feel empathy towards. And so I think, yes, teaching is the area where I will be able to have the biggest impact regarding this.
Jeff Beal, what did you learn from this experiment?
Well, I like to build off what President Bowman said earlier, and that is I am very optimistic about our future. And I also have an adjunct role at OSU in the winter with seniors. And our youth, if I can call you that, we have an optimistic horizon out there. And I think what we all need to do is to find ways to mobilize those fresh ideas. I think one of the takeaways for me is to be a little less cynical. You know, I'm a healthcare, quote, expert or professional, and I get pulled into all the craziness of healthcare. And working with Andy, you know, helped me revisit, you know, why I'm doing this work. And a lot of the organizations and people I work with, there is a sense of frustration that we're overwhelmed, you know, that demand outstrips supply. But I like to tell people and say, you know, we should celebrate helping one person. You know, I work with nonprofits that say, you know, this year we helped 10,000 people, and there's 100,000 more that need help. And I
because they're required to get money for funding and that kind of thing and grant proposals.
But what I like to say is, let's celebrate the 10,000 you helped. You know, let's celebrate the 5 people that we helped yesterday, and that helps you remain more optimistic because it's easy to get cynical, you know, and then lapse into this sympathetic world of, you know, wow, there's a lot of people out there in need and there's not much I can do about it, but I feel for them. So I want to really work with Andy, and I'm motivated to see Capital continue this program because I see opportunities to mobilize and give people opportunities to build off this empathy that maybe they're realizing for the first time.
Barb, you, Lutheran Social Services last year, the food pantries under your control affected the lives of more than 250,000 people who needed the services. And I was wondering, how do you stay fresh? How does it not become just a job after a while when there's so much great need and there's so much work to be done, and it's harder than ever these days?
You know, there's a lot of work to be done, and I think to Jeff's point of each individual success that we celebrate day in and day out, it's a new family, it's a different individual, it's a senior who's struggling, it's new people coming on board going, I don't know what to do, Barb. I don't know where to go for help. I've never been in this situation before. And the ability that we have as social service agencies or nonprofit agencies to celebrate that individual success really keeps you going. And it's an honor to be able, and it's humbling to be able to assist a fellow human being, and that's what it's all about, is making life easier for one individual at a time. Yeah, it's great to say that we serve 250,000 people and we made sure they had food on their table for their children. But I know those individual people, many of those 250,000 people. I know Louise, I know Mary, I know Ted, and I know John, who is a father, single father, trying to take care of 2 little boys because his wife left. And then he became downsized. It's all the different stories that come together, and every story is different. Every situation seems to be different. And it's all people who want to take care of themselves. They don't want to see someone taking care of them. They have a great deal of pride, and it just keeps you going. I've done this for 8 years, and every single day I can hardly get to work and make a difference in somebody's life. And that's, I think, the way most of us feel. And it's great to be able to pass on that feeling to our students who are soon going to be taking over for a lot of us and making a difference. So it's that one person at a time and knowing them personally, trying to help them through this difficult time. It won't last forever.
We have an email from James. He says, there is a dark side to empathy. This is exhibited, for instance, with animal hoarders. One can only exercise empathy within one's own means. The military teach empathy, but you only have so many resources. And Jeff Beal, the times are very hard. Barb, you know, just made the point. And it will end, but there's a long time to go. How do you keep people up and focused and empathetic when they're stretched so thinly?
Well, I think a key is that, like Barb said, most of the folks that we are helping and organizations in the social sector are helping have a lot of dignity. And so this is not about solving their problem for them. It is about helping them realize what resources, what capabilities are there for them to better and improve their own lives. And I think that's one of the fallacies that's out there is that helping people is about just handing solutions to people, when in reality my learning is that when you tell somebody what their problem is and how to solve it does not work. Mm-hmm. It's about inviting people into realizing where are they at and then meeting them where they're at and helping them find pathways to improve whatever situation you're dealing with. And I know I just stay grounded in that. And that's what I think many of us are realizing. That's what works. The days of telling people, you know, what their problem is and what they have to do to fix it, it doesn't work. So I view that as a refreshing that I'm seeing more people adopting that philosophy, that approach.
We have a couple emails. I'll try to get those, and then we're going to have to go. From Kathy, she writes, as a parent, I model empathy for my children, and it is a pleasure to see my children becoming empathetic individuals. They do have some good anti-bullying programs at school, but I find it is hard to teach if empathy isn't modeled at home. Preschool programs modeling empathy could help. And from Bob, my empathy stemmed from my experience and from my being taught through my one-on-one relations. And at the basis of all of this were some aspects of my early religious upbringing. Again, that moral component that doesn't have to be religious necessarily, but seems to be a part of it all. We've been talking about empathy this hour. I want to thank my guests, Jeff Beal of Access Health Columbus. Thank you very much, Jeff, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And also Barbara Packer. She is Corporate Director of Food Pantries for Lutheran Social Services in Franklin, Fairfield, Guernsey, and Noble Counties. Barb, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Andy Grizel, you're going to be presenting tonight at that function that'll explain what the project was about. That's at 5 o'clock tonight at Mies Hall at Capital University. Go to empathyexperiment.eventbrite.com to learn more. If you want to learn more about the program, go to empathy.capital.edu. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.